petitions and so on in the interwar period to try to reconstruct the role of the Balkans in human rights history. And she'll be talking today about histories of inclusion, primarily in the case of post-World War II refugee regimes. And to my left, to your right, is Glenn Mutoma, who's assistant professor in residence at the University of Human Rights Program. He, too, has moved from one discipline to another, or vice-discipline, cultural studies into history. And he also works for Richard as the book review editor for the Journal of Human Rights Studies, and is currently finishing a biography of one of the important human rights founders, if you will, Charles Malik, whom I've reproduced on your cover here. And I'm married to a Lebanese woman, so I'm going to say he's the one with the Lebanese nose. Charles Malik with Rene Cassin and Eleanor Roosevelt. So about 15 minutes or less.
Do you want to stand up?
No, I think it's kind of this kind of thing.
Okay.
I prefer to say. So are people able to hear down there? Is my question. Is it you can hear okay? Okay. So Pamela, please.
All right, well, thank you so much for the invitation, and this is a really exciting initiative. And the good thing is we all have one another's papers, even if we haven't had time to read every single word. So I'll try to summarize what's in the paper and sort of talk about what I see as the main points. In the paper, one of my goals is to challenge a pervasive narrative that locates human rights in a widening circle of rights. And so, you know, I give some examples, and one of the most well-known is probably the Lynn Hunt thesis, right, that where she talks about how the universal language employed in the Declaration of the Rights of Man made it possible for groups excluded from rights and practice to take up the rhetoric of universalism and demand a wider application of human rights. And, you know, she talks about the inner logic of rights having this cascading effect, a tendency to cascade, although, of course, she recognizes it's not always smooth, it's not always without resistance. But this notion that rights have a bulldozer force by which those who've been excluded from them can push the frontier of rights forward in what I call almost a human rights version of manifest destiny. So there's, of course, a large body of work that criticizes the evolutionary assumptions, right, of this kind of narrative. But I think assumptions about the eventual triumph, even in people who position that triumph as strange or surprising, underwrite so much of the scholarship about human rights. So what I try to do in the paper is to look at struggles in the 20th century over who constituted a bona fide refugee, who came under the definition of a refugee, because this is a story that is much more complex. It's as much about exclusions as it is about inclusions. It's not a unidirectional tale of widening rights. So I use this story and then, you know, what encourages us to think about other aspects of human rights where, again, we could write a much more variegated, bumpy kind of story of inclusion, exclusions, and so on. And I think many of the papers from what I've read were all kind of pushing at the linear narratives of human rights. And I've been thinking about, as an anthropologist, why there's such a search for a narrative. I mean, these are really, you know, their origin stories and their cosmologies and so on. And so why we can't just sort of admit the nuances and complexity, not we, but why there has to be a genealogy, an origin point, right? But this is a really strong emphasis in the literature. So so one of the things I'm looking in the paper and then in my research at this category of displaced persons who come to be known as national refugees, who are excluded from the international legal definitions of the refugee over time. And it's part of this much larger book project that examines the experiences of Italians after World War II, Italian nationals, who came from a whole range of territories that Italy lost with the defeat of fascism. So these territories included formal colonies, the African colonies in Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Somalia. They included departments, Libya, and the Dodecanese Islands, protectorates, Albania, and then integral parts of the Italian state, parts of Venezia Giulia and the Valle d'Aosta that were ceded to other states. And of course, these are very wide range of circumstances for which individuals migrated and different statuses of the territories. But when these nationals migrate to the Italian peninsula, they do have a common experience and juridical status as national refugees that unites, you know, these very different histories of the places from which they have they've come. And for many observers at the time, and then even scholars today, these kinds of migrants seem very different in kind, and often even sometimes people talk about scale, the numbers, from so-called bona fide refugees, those in the same period of time who were being administered as displaced persons by United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration and the International Refugee Organization and eventually UNHCR. And scholars like Goodwin Gill have talked about this consensus that national refugees didn't constitute an international problem and didn't require international protection. But I'm interested in really looking at how we get to that consensus, because it's not obvious at all in 1945 in a place like Italy, where you have this very large population of displaced persons who will ultimately be sorted into categories of national refugees and foreign displaced persons, and you will see the emergence of two different assistance regimes which have very different goals, because the national refugees need to be integrated into Italy, and there's never any question in the Italian context that foreign displaced persons will be settled permanently in Italy. Italy is a transit point for them for overseas settlement by the UN agencies. And what's one of the things that I found in my research is that this question of the status of Italians coming from these former territories, it comes up again and again. I was shocked by sort of how much time is spent debating this question on the part of various international actors.